Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's panel, where we're going to explore how, if you truly want to connect with the next generation, gaming is the industry you need to be playing in. More than 3 billion people in the world are gamers, and around 500 million people are esports fans. This is no niche, constrained by pervasive stereotypes of teenage boys and time spent indoors. Everyone, including the person sitting next to you right now, is a gamer. Gaming is a multi-billion dollar international industry, larger than music and movies combined. It's where the next generation are connecting, playing, and creating. So how do you and your brand get involved? To introduce myself, I'm Izzy Ashton, Senior Account Director at Propeller Group, an agency specializing in PR, content, and business development. We work across a wide range of clients from advertising to tech and media. And here with me today are an esteemed expert duo who will lift the lid on an industry and an audience you shouldn't be sleeping on. Giulio Zucchini is Commercial Partnership Strategy Director at ESL Facet Group, the world's leading esports and video game entertainment company. Coming from a sports background in Formula One and Premier League football, Giulio is passionate about the intersection of culture and sport and brings her experience in this space to the stage today. So welcome, Giulio. Megan Chong is a client services director at Geek, a data platform and insights provider that enables some of the world's largest brands to navigate the virtual world. Megan heads up the team looking after H&M, Max Mara, Sam's Club and Ralph Lauren, among other brands, and cut her teeth working with the team at Gucci. A gaming enthusiast, she was also Geek's very first employee. So, to kick things off, Giulio, could you give the audience a bit of context about the difference between esports and gaming? Because I think it's important to kind of set that up at the top of the talk.
Yeah, I see some familiar gaming faces in the audience, so I'm sure I'm saying what's quite obvious to some of you. But for those that are not familiar, ESL Facet Group, we work both in gaming and esports. But gaming is more of your mass market side of things. So it's more of your participation element, whether it's your grandma playing Candy Crush on her phone, whether you're playing on your PlayStation or on your PC. But it's that participation level more for fun and entertainment, whilst esports is the pro side of things. So the same thing as you would have, obviously, Formula One, Premier League, NBA, and so on. Esports is the pro level across a lot of different games. So obviously, we have lots of different game publishers that produce different games, AAA titles, and they tend to develop those pro competitions that then also have the sort of equivalent of live sports as well. So big arenas, sold out audiences, with your top athletes performing in those.
Nice. Yeah. And Megan, I'd love to kind of bring you in here from a sort of personal and professional angle. How has the gaming landscape sort of changed for brands over the last few years?
Yeah, I think just make sure everyone can hear me well. Let me know if I need to project. I think it's been really interesting seeing how brands have entered the space. And I think from a personal point of view, I think one of the earliest brand activations I've ever seen in gaming was, I think, around back in like 2014 when Mercedes went into Mario Kart 8. I don't know how many people are familiar with that activation, still in this game till today. And I think then we evolved a little bit. I think so brands were very much looking at the space only from like an IP partnership point of view, seeing games as an IP and sort of looking at those partnerships in that way. And then we evolved to around 2019, 2022, where a lot of you may have sort of heard about gaming a lot more, especially through the esports angle, where we had this boom of esports and professional sports. And I think there was also this big notion of brands could now sponsor these professional teams, sponsor these professional tournaments to get eyeballs on their brand. And I think now where we're sort of seeing it evolve in 2024, in the last couple of years especially, a really interesting thing that brands have been doing with sort of more with a further boom in sort of what we call virtual gaming platforms, things like Roblox and Fortnite Creative, where anyone can create their own space, create their own items. We see brands evolving even further and creating their own spaces on these gaming platforms and creating a space where audiences and users can enter, you know, entire games that are shaped by, you know, Ralph Lauren, Gucci, you know, Walmart, just to name a few. It's been really exciting, I think, in that way where, you know, there are just so many options for brands in the space to really engage with this audience. And yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think it'd be good to hear from both of you to sort of speak directly to the brands in the audience that might be a little hesitant to step into what they might consider sort of a new space. What would your advice be? How do you kind of alleviate the concern? Because I think, you know, there's a lot of when a new space opens up, there's a lot of kind of stereotypes that are at play and people make a presumption without actually understanding it. So it'd be great to kind of hear from both of you as to how you would advise brands. Maybe Julia, we'll sort of start with you.
Yeah, I think on my side, and this sounds a little controversial because a lot of people say dip your toes in gaming, see if it works for you, and then, you know, you can always dip back out. I disagree with that. I think if you enter the gaming and the esports space, you need to go full in. You need to have a long-term strategy because the gaming audience is very vocal. They're not as used to maybe traditional sports fans or music fans to be bombarded with branding. So, you know, you don't have all the LED boards with branding or the jersey sponsors quite as much. So if you enter the space, you need to have that long-term strategy and you need to be doing something authentic. So I'd say to any brand, you know, work with agencies that know the space well, they know the audience well, they've studied it, and also work with rights holders that are the experts. We know what we're doing in this space and we can advise you on how to best portray your brand in that virtual space or also in the physical gaming esports space.
Mm. Yeah, and I think to add on to that, you know, part of any good like long-term strategy is really just understanding your goals and your objectives and your KPIs. As I said, there's so many options for brands to play in this space, and it's going to be daunting to figure out what the right thing for your brand is. Trusting experts is absolutely important, but knowing what you want to get out of it is, you know, really just the first step of, I guess, like any marketing strategy. Do you want to get eyeballs on your brands? Are you looking to build like meaningful communities or you know, are you looking to gather sort of like build brand affinity, build brand love? I mean, these are just the core of any marketing sort of strategy, and those things still apply in gaming. It's not too different, and they're going to be activations or partnerships or rights holders that you partner with to achieve those different objectives. So I think that's really the first step to
yeah, place. Nice. And then let's talk about impact, because gaming's next generation audience, as you've already said, you know, they're savvy. They smell bullshit a mile off and they're not afraid to call it out. And I think, how does a brand have an impact with this particular audience to avoid sort of showing up unannounced or showing up where the community doesn't want them to be? How does a brand sort of tread that line? And maybe Megan, I'd love to sort of come to you first for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting sort of when you say where, you know, audiences maybe don't want brands to be. Actually, you know, there are many studies out there that actually gamers are really receptive to advertising and branding, particularly when there is a reward for them at the end of it. Mm. I don't know how many of you are guilty of this, but when you play Candy Crush and you need an extra life and maybe it says, watch this ad and you'll get an extra life, and you're like, yeah, I'll do it. It's sort of that mentality behind it. And I think, you know, with gaming and with this new media, there's so much brands can offer that really feel like meaningful utility to users that they might not be able to offer in sort of traditional marketing mediums. So I think, yeah.
I guess because it's so intimate, that relationship with the gamer.
Exactly. So I really think, yeah, building that intimate relationship, knowing what they're here to do. They're here to play games. They want to maybe like further their progress in a game or just get fun out of it. Marrying that with like, again, understanding your objectives, being authentic to your brand. What do you want to say? And understanding them, and you know, I think just bridging that together is really...
Yeah, and I think to add to that, I think gaming is this unique space where, you know, most of us are on social media and brands do a lot on social media, but most of the time you are quite passive on social media. You're scrolling, you're looking at something, you might double tap, and obviously we know that metrics, you count that as an engagement. But in gaming, people are actually actively participating in potentially a branded world if it's something like Roblox or Fortnite. The participation is a lot more active. So when brands can get in those spaces in a very authentic way, I would say most of the time utilizing the language of a game, for example, you know, you don't want to go into Dota 2 using Counter-Strike language, because that doesn't make sense the same way that you wouldn't go into football using basketball language. Mm. So I think as long as brands understand that and they really utilize that native language and get involved in the IP and everything that they're doing, then it will feel a lot more native to anything that they do there as well.
Mm. And maybe just on that, because I know your experience is obviously in traditional sports, and it might be nice just to kind of give a sense of the learnings that you've kind of taken from Formula One and Premier League in your previous roles and brought it into the esports and gaming, particularly when it comes to like fandom and how you speak. You mentioned language. I think that could be a really interesting point just to pull out a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, Formula One obviously had some restrictions in terms of the way that they're allowed to speak about certain partnerships and the way that sponsorship and partnerships can be activated. Gaming has the great advantage of being a bit more flexible with it, because we are a bit younger, a bit more fun, a bit more dynamic. So we can definitely play around with our partnerships a bit more, which is great. And, you know, we've had some great examples of brands that we work with, from Intel, Monster, DHL, that have shown up in ways that really resonate with our audience. So I mean, the example that I always give is DHL. We literally have people chanting DHL when they come to our Dota 2 events, which I think is pretty rare. I think any brand would pay a lot of money for people to just be chanting their name whenever they enter an arena. And that was done because not only were they giving rewards to that audience in terms of, again, rewards that they could give with DHL, they also did a recruitment campaign through us and offering jobs to the esports community. But again, using that native language, all of their content really resonated with that audience. It made sense. Mm. And was like intertwined fully with what the gaming community would want to see. Mm. So they were very successful in doing that. I don't think that can be as easily done in sports, just because of the regulations around it and how much stricter with their brand IPs a lot of sports entities are.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's such an interesting idea, isn't it, about developing the content with the community for the community. And I feel like gaming is a really strong example of that. And it'd be nice to kind of hear from both of you about the most exciting brand partnership that you've seen, you know, the one that left you like really truly convinced of a brand sort of potential in this ecosystem. And Megan, I'd love to start with you.
Yeah, I mean, that DHL example is an absolute classic, if I may say so myself. I remember when I turned up to a Dota 2 tournament in Birmingham in 2019. And yeah, there were people in DHL t-shirts, DHL face paint on their faces. And look, we know it's not, if I may say so, the sexiest of brands. Like, who is going to go and be like, yeah, I love DHL? But these esports audiences, these people here watching this game were doing that. And they were chanting it meaningfully and very organically. So that is like, that is just such a great example of how you can make such a strong impact in the community. I think another great example that I didn't personally work on, but some of my great colleagues at Geek did, is Walmart. Don't know if you all may have seen Walmart when they released their first Roblox experience. That kind of made some headlines and maybe was a bit of a scapegoat around the talking point of like gaming and metaverse is dead. But, you know, since then, Walmart has actually launched a second experience, and, you know, 21 million visits later, you know, they have this like incredible 96% approval rating on their game in Roblox. And that's all through reshaping their experience around utility and providing utility to the audience, which is a great marrying of what Walmart does in real life, but translating that into the gaming world. And I think that's fantastic. You know, they rewarded the community with a lot of like free avatar clothing. You know, that's what they love. Walmart knew that's what the community liked, and they used that and they gave that to the audience. And I think even since then, they've been trialing sort of potentially linking e-commerce into their experience, and the future of that is amazing. And, mm-hmm. you know, absolute conviction of like brands really have the ability to come to this space and add a lot of value, make a lot of impact with the audience. You don't have to be, you know, I think Julia and I would be remiss not to mention Julia and I worked on some incredible projects with Gucci, but, you know, even a brand like Walmart, like DHL, can achieve, you know, such great results in this community.
Yeah, I think that point about translating how the brand is already experienced and showing up and translating that into the game. So, you know, you don't have to be a different kind of brand to be in the gaming space. You just work with the community to translate it. I really like that use of the word. Actually, I think it's a really interesting point. And Julia, yeah, what would be kind of your brand example that you'd share with us?
Probably can't talk at length about it, but the Gucci project and everything that Gucci really does in the gaming space from what they've done on Roblox. But what we did with the Gucci Gaming Academy, I'd recommend everyone to go check it out, and especially the content series with GG Legends, I thought was fantastic storytelling that really married what a brand wants to portray and the luxury of Gucci, but mixing that with what gaming really is and gaming personalities. And I think it gave a really different take to what gaming and esports content had been previously. So yeah, go check it out, because it's definitely a bit of a different vibe to the overall gaming landscape.
The evolution of the gaming landscape. Yeah. And I think when a brand sort of steps into the gaming ecosystem, they're connected to 3 billion gamers, 500 million esports fans, 365 days a year, 24/7. So can you talk about why that sort of always on nature is so vital for brands, particularly today when we are always on? And yeah, Julia, maybe I'll kick off with you.
I think it just gives the perfect opportunity to show up in a lot of different ways and interact with people in different ways as well. So obviously at EFG, we have ESL, which is more of our live event side of the business. So again, the sold out arenas. But we then have Faceit, which is a gaming platform. We have about 30 million users on there. And that is 365 days a year. It's always on. People can come online whenever they want, play their favorite games, connect with people. It's building that community. And for a brand to be able to come in that space where people are showing up authentically, they're showing up because they want to compete, they want to play with their friends, and for a brand to be able to enter that zone where people are naturally hanging out, a bit like your social media side of things, you know, people spend a lot of hours on there. I believe people spend about 2.5 hours on Faceit on average a day. So it's a very long engagement time on there. For a brand to be able to enter that space in the digital realm and have these touch points with people that then can also translate to what we do on the physical side, I think is quite a rare opportunity to be able to continue that messaging through tentpole events and those digital activations.
That relationship as well,
I think you touched on a really important point there with the time spent in these environments. You know, we think about social media, and yes, there are a lot of people logging onto social media every day and various platforms and interacting with all sorts of branded content, advertising or organic on there. We know the extent of that interaction is, if we are generous, 2 to 5 seconds. You know, it's a double tap. Maybe they're commenting, maybe they're sharing if we're very lucky. I think thing about, you know, these gaming platforms is users are in there for, you know, hours at a time. The average time for a user to spend in a branded environment on Roblox is up to 10 minutes. That's 10 minutes of a user being in a space entirely shaped, and, you know, storytelling is entirely shaped by your brand, which is just something that's unheard of when it comes to trying to engage, especially, you know, this generation, you know, shorter attention spans and things like that. So I think it's, you know, it's absolutely something that brands need to consider.
Every marketer's dream to get 10 minutes of concentrated attention. Yeah, and I think it'd be interesting to maybe talk about the sort of market and geographical trends that you're seeing in gaming. Because obviously we're in London today and, you know, these businesses are London-based. But it'd be interesting to see to hear about the trends that you're seeing across the world. Because obviously gaming is, you know, it's not just focused on one location. So yeah, Julia, I'd love to kind of get your perspective on where you're seeing sort of key gaming hubs popping up.
Yeah, I think there's lots of interesting trends. And again, it depends what type of gaming you're looking at. So whether it's console, PC, and also what game titles. So certain game titles will be more successful in different geographies. But I think obviously a lot of the developments that we're seeing in mobile gaming are very interesting. Obviously, that kind of democratizes gaming. It allows everybody a step in because it's a lot cheaper to have a mobile phone or now a data connection. In a lot of parts of the world, it's getting much cheaper. So everybody can come online on their mobile and play those games. So everything that we're seeing, especially in Asia, India being a leader in it with all of mobile gaming, PUBG Mobile and so on, is incredible to see. And we're seeing similar developments in Africa as well. So Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa are heavily investing in those mobile infrastructures, but also on the console side of things. And then obviously the Middle East is also heavily investing in the area. They're really keen to be that entertainment hub, which is very exciting to see because, again, having that investment, especially from an esports level side of things as well, is great to push all the environment forward as well.
And I think if I can just add on, even around the general topic of demographics, I don't know if, you know, sometimes the perspective of gaming is that it's still young boys in their mom's basement playing video games. But, you know, all across the board, across all gaming platforms, you know, ones that have existed for 10 to 20 years and even newer games, the audience is aging up. You know, we grew up, well, I grew up sort of playing Just Dance in the living room or, you know, Mario Kart against my brothers or Guitar Hero. And now we're sort of like people aging up into their 30s and 40s who are still, you know, engaging in those hobbies, engaging that as a pastime. And it's a place where, you know, for the most part, it's not being utilized in order to engage, and for brands, it's not being utilized to sort of engage these users. So I think, aging up is also a big thing.
Yeah, and just to touch on that, I think what's interesting is people age up, and even though they're not maybe actively gaming themselves, they tend to then turn into watchers, so they're still consuming that gaming content. Mm. So we see that quite a lot. In our ecosystem, maybe somebody is no longer attempting that path to pro, but they're definitely still consuming that content. They're watching their favorite streamers. They're still consuming all of that. So it's very important. But the average age on at ESL Facebook Group as a whole group, I think, is about 27 compared to traditional sports that tend to go in their 40s. If you look at golf and rugby, it tends to be a lot older, for example. So there's a whole sort of life cycle that brands are ignoring.
Yeah. Once a gamer, always a gamer.
And I think also, even then, like, talking about how this generation is growing up as digital native, not only are they, you know, really engaged on these gaming platforms, but they're also more engaged across all digital platforms. Mm. I think there's an incredible study that I read where, you know, engagement rates of people who are fans of gaming or, you know, or like gaming influencers on platforms like Instagram and YouTube receive much higher engagement rates than the average influencer. That's because that audience is so digitally native. That's how they engage with these influencers, is through their digital content. It's, you know, it's much more engaging. It's much more authentic. That engagement was just higher as well. Mm.
Might be interesting just to talk a little bit about the kind of gaming influencer space, because obviously, as we've seen, the general influencer space increase. Have you seen the same kind of happening across the gaming influencer space? You know, are there more influencers, or are they the esports sort of pro players who are becoming the influencers? How is that kind of, how is the influencer system sort of infiltrating the gaming ecosystem?
Yeah, I think I failed to mention earlier, I think, you know, on top of like the birth of esports and things like that, gaming content in general is massive. Mm. TikTok, YouTube game, even the birth of YouTube gaming sort of as a rival to it, Twitch, which is a massive game-focused streaming, live streaming platform, the birth of that. And then even on TikTok now, TikTok, there is live streaming. There's a lot of gaming content being live streamed, but also, you know, just as VODs that exist on those platforms. But just, it's, you know, it's not a siloed ecosystem. Gamers, as you said, we're all gamers, and we're not a homogenous sort of group. We consume content as much as we play video games, and we do everything else that most people do. Mm. So it only makes sense that all that is sort of seeping into other areas as well.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes both ways. I think there's pro esports players that have always lived on streaming platforms and have garnered great success from that. But then we also see people like, for example, the Sidemen, where some of them were notoriously bad gamers. So they didn't get famous because they were good at whatever they were doing, but they were funny and had other things. And, you know, now they've been able to launch brands, merchandise. They've started golf teams and football teams. So it kind of goes both ways. But I think a lot of the trends of what we see, for example, on Faceit, we have options for our users to auto-generate replays for anything that they do for their gameplay. People are wanting to have that content of their own gameplay. They want to be sharing it. So everyone's really a content creator in that gaming space. And then also they really enjoy being able to control what they watch. So we have a new product called Faceit Watch, where people can literally watch their favorite stream, but then decide what viewpoint they want to watch. They can decide what player they want to watch, and so on. So giving that control and flexibility, I think, is what the gaming generation really loves.
Mm. It's almost like gaming was set up for this evolution of influencer
Absolutely,
marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be also good to maybe know what your favorite games are, as we probably have some fellow gamers in the audience. So Megan, do you want to kick us off?
Wrong move, making me kick off. I'm going to absolutely geek out and speak for the next 10 minutes. No.
Perfect.
This is so lame. And I love this genre of games called simulation management games, which everyone's going to be like, what is she? It's games where you play God and you manage an entire business
Betrays a lot about you, Nick.
Yeah, it says a lot about me. When I get off work, I go home and manage my hospital on the side, you know? or like I'm leader of a tropical island. There's this amazing game called Tropical. I'm leader of a tropical island and I'm trying to keep, you know, my citizens happy and balance all the political parties, but also make sure I'm earning enough money. It's sad, but I can sink hours into those environments and they're so fun. And I love them. That's my personal preference.
I guess it's also like, in a way, the point of gaming is to take yourself out of your reality. And that's exactly what those sort of games do. They just sort of allow you to inhabit a different reality for a bit.
Yeah, even though it still feels like a job. It is a different type of job.
I feel like The Sims and Club Penguin enabled all of these worlds to happen.
Yeah, really, The Sims.
I'm probably a lot more boring. I'm also notoriously awful at any game, even though I practice Counter-Strike a lot when I can in the office, but I'm still awful. But I'm more traditional. I just play NBA 2K and FIFA mostly. Again, please never challenge me because I'm horrendous. But I do enjoy the sort of, there's always an element of storytelling in these games as well. Obviously, you can do My Career and you can develop all your path there. So it's really enjoyable. And my professional basketball career failed early on, but in NBA My Career, I'm a superstar. So that's great.
Nice. And I think we're sort of coming towards the end, but it'd be good to hear from both of you about where you sort of see the future of gaming going. What do you think is kind of the next step for the industry, maybe particularly from the brand perspective? So Megan, if you kick it off.
Yeah, I think I touched on it a bit earlier, but brands creating their own immersive spaces is really where I think is the most interesting space, at least, and I would love to see the industry sort of grow towards that direction, especially now with, as I mentioned, some innovations around e-commerce, like how much more can brands really build around not only great storytelling and great engagement, but then linking back to bottom of the funnel conversion metrics as well.
Yeah.
I think that's where I would love to put my bets in. I think that's where it is most interesting for brands. But even just if those spaces existing on their own is just such meaningful engagement you can get with audiences, community building, I do think it's the next thing.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
I think obviously the storytelling element is incredibly important. I think the more storytelling you can have for a gaming community, the more they'll feel immersed and involved with your brand. But I think one thing that we haven't really touched on is the partnership landscape in general across entertainment is quite saturated. There are so many brands that activate in different ways. So I think if you can align to a purpose and add value to those communities, especially the gaming community, which is a real community, or all the sub-communities within it, it's really important. So if find your purpose and find how you want to be additive to these communities. It doesn't always have to be a super serious one either, you know, it can be fun, but make sure that you are adding value, doing something different, and not just plastering your brand everywhere, because that will generate way better returns with the community. And they might be chanting your name in the next arena.
Nice. So let's just leave the audience with sort of one actionable takeaway, something that they can do today to impact their brand tomorrow. So the final question of today is going to be, what's the one thing brands need to understand about the gaming ecosystem before they step into it?
I would say that the ecosystem is extremely vast, but don't be scared about taking that step. There are a lot of opportunities, and I think you can just find something that is perfect for your brand. So talk to the experts, work out your KPIs, and there will be something that you can add to that community, and it will make a difference for your brand, because again, it's a very engaged community and they will fully involve themselves in whatever you do.
Yeah, and I think absolutely everything you said is exactly what I was going to say, but I think also adding to that, with the ecosystem being so vast, you know, like I said, gamers are not homogenous. We're not, as proven by this panel, we're not boys, you know, sitting in our mom's basement playing video games on our own anymore. We're, you know, we're sort of women sitting on the tube playing Candy Crush, or, you know, maybe you go home and play FIFA every once in a while. So it's about understanding your KPIs, finding the right space, the right partnership, the right, you know, partners, even in the space, to then sort of reach that target audience. I think also, if I may lead with the trust your expert sort of thing, our CEO of Geek, Charles, will be speaking at a keynote tomorrow at 10:20, I believe. So if you want to learn more, really deep dive into space and understand it more, you know, listen to that.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you to Julia and Megan for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.